Good morning. This is the Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 2nd. I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up after the state and local headlines, the impact of COVID-19 on crime in Boulder. The city council discussed that last night. We'll have a report. Two Niwot High School students talked to us about their efforts to fight oil and gas fracking in Boulder County. Also, our regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You, and opportunities to engage with public officials, and local herbalist Brigitte Mars with Naturally. BBC and Jim Hightower's commentary at the bottom of the hour. Then a conversation about wealth inequality in the United States and the enormous increase in the wealth of the richest Americans during the pandemic. We'll talk with Chuck Collins from the Institute for Policy Studies. And our series on homelessness in Boulder continues. It's called Unhoused, and we hear part four today. Eclectic music on the Morning Sound Alternative at 9:30, all still ahead, all made possible by the listener members of KGNU. Thanks, members. Time for state and local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Yesterday, Colorado Governor Jared Polis said he believes incarcerated people should not receive access to upcoming vaccines ahead of free people, even though those in prisons have been subject to many of Colorado's most severe coronavirus outbreaks. Polis's position seems to go against the vaccine distribution Colorado's Department of Public Health and Environment published weeks ago. The Denver Post reports that the health department framework puts incarcerated people at the top of phase two of three phases. Phase one would include those considered to be critical workforce and highest risk individuals. The health department plan would put prisoners ahead of the general public deemed high risk, but not the highest risk, such as adults 65 and older or adults with diabetes and other COVID-19 comorbidities. The governor's remarks have drawn strong criticism, condemnation from criminal justice reform advocates, including Rachel Barkow of New York University, who said on Twitter that Polis had campaigned on a progressive vision, but his rhetoric is as regressive as it can be. On Tuesday, the State Department of Corrections reported the total COVID-19 death toll among Colorado prisoners now stands at 11. Four of those 11 have been reported in the last week alone. Polis made his remarks at a news conference where he was joined by Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert. Fauci repeated the message for people to wear masks, avoid indoor gatherings, and those outside their households, and keep washing their hands. And he also addressed the role of public officials.
That mixed messaging, particularly from people in authority, is really something that countermands the kind of messaging that we like to get to people so that they understand what the appropriate thing to do. And wherever the mixed message comes from, particularly if it comes from a person in authority, is not only not helpful, it can actually be detrimental.
Yesterday, the Colorado legislature convened for its second day of a special session to address the COVID-19 pandemic and offer some relief to businesses and families. Of the roughly 35 bills that were introduced Monday, only about a dozen made it to yesterday's session, including eight priority bills for Democrats. Denver 7 reports those bills have bipartisan support and include small business relief, housing and rental assistance, broadband access, utility assistance, public health assistance, sales tax relief, child care support, and food pantry assistance. A measure that would provide $57 million in aid for small businesses could be on Governor Polis' desk today. That money would be available to businesses most impacted by COVID-19 restrictions, including restaurants, bars, caterers, movie theaters, fitness clubs, and cultural arts and entertainment venues. In Boulder, County Public Health Director Jeff Zayach told the City Council last night the vast majority of recent positive cases have been in Longmont. As part of a regular update to City Council, Zayach said the county has been in a downward trend, but the flattening is likely to rise again due to the millions of people who traveled over the Thanksgiving holiday. He noted that hospitalizations are not headed in the right direction and will continue to climb depending on personal behavior.
We see hospitalizations happening at the 18 to 22-year-old age group. Even though we're not seeing many hospitalized ICU folks at that age group, we are starting to see them at 25 to 34. So this does impact more than just our oldest age groups. We are seeing hospitalizations starting in that 18 to 22 year old group. Our highest hospitalizations, unfortunately, now are creeping up into the most sensitive and the most vulnerable age groups, which is 75 plus. And again, you can see a fairly high number in the 55 to 64 age group as well. So it is impacting people across that age range.
Boulder County reported 167 new coronavirus cases Tuesday and two new deaths related to the virus. Both of the people who died were residents of a long-term care facility. In Denver, there's been a recent spike of COVID-19 cases among Native American and Native Alaskan residents. Denverite reports that as of late last month, data shows they make up about 7.5% of all cases, but represent less than 0.5% of Denver residents. The data also shows that between October 18th and November 1st, cases among Native American and Native Alaskan residents rose by more than 7 percentage points. The jump was a sharp, considering cases have been hovering around 1% among this group during most of the pandemic. The spike coincided with an increase of cases across the city and across most racial demographics, including white residents in Denver. The Colorado Attorney General's Office announced yesterday it has found that there were more victims of child sex abuse in the state's Catholic diocese than an earlier report concluded. The Colorado Sun reports that the AG's investigators identified an additional 46 victims dating back to 1950. A first investigation found more than 200. The new revelations were released in a supplemental report that marks the end of a 22-month investigation into the church covering the past 7 decades. In today's weather, it will be partly sunny with a high near 31. Tomorrow, sunny and warmer with the highs in the upper 40s. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
Minutes after 8 now at listener-supported KGNU. COVID-19 has created its own set of statistics when it comes to crime, and Boulder is not exempt. KGNU's Roz Brown has more on the latest crime update reviewed by the Boulder City Council last night.
Maris Harold arrived in Boulder as a new police chief last March in the midst of the pandemic and says COVID-19 has created a significant challenge.
Assaults are up compared to other violent crimes, and this runs true in Boulder. Motor vehicle thefts and theft from autos are up in Boulder and across the county. Burglaries are up in Boulder, but mixed results elsewhere. Domestic violence calls are up, and police agencies are reporting victim services calls are up as well across the county. Sexual assault reports are down. However, calls to crisis centers are up. Child abuse reporting, DUIs, and drug offenses down across all cities.
In presenting the Police Strategic Action Plan and Crime Update to Boulder City Council last night, Chief Harold said jail space continues to be very problematic, which isn't unique to Boulder, but also occurring across the country.
But as COVID worsens, the jail restrictions worsen.
She says many police responses in 2020 could not have been anticipated.
We were receiving intelligence of possible election disruption and tremendous amount of resources had to go into planning for possible election disruption in Boulder and cities close to Boulder. Obviously, COVID has proven to be very resource-driven, so staffing and resources have been given throughout the city for this. The wildfires took a tremendous amount of resources away from the police department. And then lastly, we cannot forget that the murder of George Floyd proved to be very disrupting in policing, and we are working very hard on police legitimacy and building communities of trust moving forward.
Beth Christensen has been hired by the Boulder Police Department to make sense of the crime statistics. She says police receive about 800,000 calls per year, with 75% of those classified as reactive.
This leaves very little room for discretionary time where officers may engage in proactive policing. Proactive policing may include directed patrols into hotspot locations or engaging with the community on other crime prevention techniques. Best practice, based on what we are trying to achieve here in the Boulder Police Department, is to reach 55 to 60% reactive. That will increase the amount of time that officers have available to engage in proactive policing and participate in other administrative tasks.
Christensen says crime is still relatively low in Boulder, but crime is up in almost every category, including an increased rate of theft from autos.
So let's look at theft from autos. Theft from autos or vehicle trespassing is experiencing a 37% increase compared to the 5-year average. And I just want to highlight theft from auto is the actual taking of something physically from a vehicle, but not the vehicle itself. So since the shutdown, the city of Boulder in mid-March, our theft from autos have stayed consistently up above the normal range. These crimes are concentrated around shopping districts and parking lots where vehicles are left unattended for extended periods of time.
And it may not surprise anyone who has lived in Boulder for any length of time that the theft of bicycles continues to be a chronic problem.
So as of November 22nd, we had 995 reported stolen bicycles this year with a total value of $1.83 million. This blows me away.
Christensen adds the department has identified hotspot locations for bicycle thefts, and officers are issued alerts about where those crimes are occurring. But she says anyone with a bike should have it registered for a greater chance of recovery. In general, Christensen urged Boulder residents to lock their bikes, their cars, and their homes to prevent crimes of opportunity as the pandemic rages on. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
8:15 now at KGNU. Students from Niwot High School are urging the Boulder County Commissioners to ban fracking. In particular, they're concerned about a proposal from Crestone Peak Energy to drill about 140 wells along Highway 52, just west of the Weld County line. That's just a few miles from their school. The students spoke during a public hearing Tuesday on Boulder County's implementation of new state requirements on oil and gas development. Two of those students join us now. Maya Bovino and Simon Saya are both members of the Environmental Club at Niwot High, and they're both interns with 350 Colorado, a climate advocacy group. Well, you both testified at a public hearing yesterday regarding the new oil and gas regulations. Maya, let's start with you. What did you tell the commissioners?
We used the opportunity to speak in front of the public hearing for the county commissioners to really advocate for a ban on fracking. We believe that the proposed regulations at this moment are not sufficient to effectively protect our health and the well-being of the environment, as SB 19181 specifies. And so we believe that we really are imploring the Boulder County commissioners to take greater action to protect our health and the well-being of the environment.
Senate Bill 181, passed by the legislature last year, now being implemented. That has been hailed by many environmental activists as a great step forward in terms of greater regulation and greater protection from the damaging effects of oil and gas fracking. Simon, I heard Maya say it doesn't go far enough. Do you agree, and why?
Yeah, we wanted, as we spoke last night, we just wanted to really put pressure on the Boulder County commissioners. We don't feel like it's sufficient. We want 2,500-foot setbacks from all high-occupancy buildings, including schools. And we're really pushing for a ban on fracking in Boulder County. We just don't believe, with the science and what we've learned, that this SB 181 is not doing enough to protect the well-being and health of our futures and of the people of Boulder County.
2,500-foot setbacks. I believe the new regulations are 2,000-foot setbacks from high-occupancy locations, right?
Correct.
So why the extra 500 feet? In your view,
there's been a lot of scientific studies that say this 2,500 feet is kind of a buffer zone, so to speak, that the effects of ozone and toluene and other molecules that are being released from the fracking sites don't affect people as much from that. The change from 2,000 feet to 2,500 feet is very, very big in terms of changing the amount that people are. Of volatile organic compounds and other molecules are being released from fracking sites, what they're breathing in. So it's a small change, but it has a big effect.
There is a proposal by Crestone Peak, an energy company, to drill something like 140 wells, right, down Highway 52 from Niwot, about 3 miles east of your school. Is your advocacy connected to that proposal? And either of you can take that.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely connected to that. And I think that's really been the driving force for the majority of our efforts, just because of, we're talking about 140 wells, the biggest fracking site in Colorado, and just the damaging health effects that would bring to us, especially in Niwot, that it's being so close to other in the surrounding Boulder community. And we really, I think we hit a lot upon that at the county commissioner hearing last night, that a lot about Crestone. And just how this project, just by itself, what hurt so many. I think, Maya, you can add on to that.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that although this mega site is the primary motivation for us to come to these public hearings and really advocate for a ban on fracking in Boulder County, our demand for a ban really goes beyond that as well, because we recognize that fracking and oil and gas extraction is often an environmental justice issue, meaning that fracking sites are often established near low-income low-income communities and communities of color. And we, although we absolutely feel threatened in NIWAT by this 140-well site, we really don't want this to just be pushed elsewhere. So this is why we demand a ban on fracking in Boulder County, and we hope that this this first step in Boulder County might inspire other counties to follow suit and eventually the state of Colorado.
I want to ask you about the reaction from the county commissioners, if they gave any reaction to what you said at the public hearing. And of course, the county commissioners are about to change, two new members coming on after the first of the year.
Well, last night, because of the new online format of the public hearings, we unfortunately were not able to interact directly with the county commissioners. However, in the past, we have attended public hearings to advocate for a ban on fracking as well, and they have taken the time after the hearings to speak to us about, acclaim us for participating in the local policy process, and they have told us their reasons for not wanting to pursue a ban on fracking, including litigation, the fear of litigation. However, we still believe that this fear is unfounded under SB 19-181, and really we can't afford to not ban fracking at this point.
We would love to just have our action from our political leaders just putting the well-being and safety of the people first, and we think that this is a very opportune time to do it. And especially, like Maya said, with the transition in office for them, that's why we had a lot of representation at last night at the county commissioner hearing, and we just really hope that they put the well-being of the people in front of oil and gas.
Yeah, I would just add that it's concerning to me that the regulation update process is coming to an end while the goal of the updates, that being to protect the health and well-being of the environment and the people of Boulder County, still remains unattained.
That's Maya Boveno, also speaking with us, Simon Saya, both members of the Environmental Club at NIWAT High School and interns with the climate advocacy group 350 Colorado. They're pushing for a ban on fracking in Boulder County. It's 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is KGNU.
Civic engagement is perhaps the most important element of the community-funded media model, and Coloradans celebrate community participation on Colorado Gives Day. KGNU is here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, airing trustworthy news and independent music brought to you by members of your community. Your donation to KGNU this Colorado Gives Day will go farther thanks to an incentive fund and a $5,000 match from the Colorado Media Project. Schedule your support today at coloradogives.org/KGNU.
Thanks for supporting KGNU on Colorado Gives Day and year-round. Time for one of our regular Wednesday morning features now, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. How is COVID relief funding affecting the post office? The HEROES Act, a trimmed-down version of which was passed by the House October 1st, includes $25 billion to shore up the United States Post Office to help with losses from the pandemic. Before the election, Donald Trump said he would veto any bill that included postal service aid and instead installed a new Postmaster General, of course, Louis DeJoy, to drastically slash services. 74% of voters support prompt Senate action on the updated HEROES Act, which was H.R. 8406 and passed in the House. Last week, Maine postal workers held a virtual press conference calling for COVID relief funding and an end to the policies delaying delivery of mail. The postal system has been strained and still awaits COVID relief funds despite incurring huge costs related to the pandemic. Quote, 65 million Americans voted by mail. I voted by mail, said Scott Adams, president of the American Postal Workers Union 458. Quote, I had the confidence in voting by mail. I think everybody needed to know that it was secure and it would work, and it did. Mark Seitz, president of the National Association of Letter Carriers Branch 92, says Postmaster General Louis DeJoy implemented policies that slow the delivery of mail and harm the service. These policies were on hold through the election, but are expected to resume now. Quote, we can't have a slowdown in the postal service. People are relying on medicine. People are relying on packages. People are relying on the postal service to get things done, close quote. Anna Keller, executive director of the League of Women Voters of Maine and Maine Citizens for Clean Elections, was also at the meeting. She stressed that support for the Postal Service is vital. Quote, how can we make sure the next time around they're not having to climb over these barriers? It shouldn't be this hard. It shouldn't take these extraordinary efforts in order for ballots to be delivered. Of course, the post office isn't the only business groaning under the financial strain of this pandemic. The Senate is not allowing a second stimulus check and additional benefits, such as enhanced unemployment benefits, which are scheduled to run out for 12 million people in just over 4 weeks. McConnell will not allow any stimulus bill onto the floor unless businesses have COVID liability protection. Hundreds of thousands of small businesses, as well as the post office, will fall through the cracks if they have to wait until after January 20th to see an economic rescue bill get passed. If you have thoughts on the House's HEROES Act and the need for some kind of bill to pass now in the Senate, you can contact your senators and House member. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
National Weather Service forecasting partly sunny skies today, temperatures in the low 30s along the Front Range. Overnight lows in the teens, sunny and warmer tomorrow. The forecast highs on Thursday in the mid-40s, and it looks like, as of now, temperatures will be in the 50s for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Stay tuned next for Naturally with Brigitte Mars.
Greetings and welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. A lot of you might be thinking about what are some of the best ways to take care of yourself during this time when there are unpredictable and unprecedented events. Well, I think it's really important to eat as healthfully as possible with a strong commitment to using things like dark orange vegetables, which are high in beta carotene, which help to strengthen the lungs and the skin. I would be putting some raw garlic on there too, because garlic is a great antimicrobial agent, which means antiviral, antifungal, and antibacterial. Garlic's also a bronchodilator. I would also be eating lots of green leafy vegetables and know that spicy things like cayenne and ginger would also be good additions to our food. Thyme is really good for our lungs, and so is oregano. So I'd be generous with those in our food as well. I would think this is a good time to minimize sugar, junk food, dairy products, which create a lot of phlegm, because the last thing you want is lots of phlegm and mucus, because you will cough more. Same could be said even for gluten, like wheat and rye and bread and pasta. So maybe more of an influence on super healthy foods. Of course, I'm always a big believer in eating all the colors of the rainbow, and that means a meal might be something like purple cabbage and black beans and green kale and red beets. So the more color, the more phytonutrients. I would also think of not overdoing things like fruit juice, because they're very sweet. You would be a lot better off just eating an orange or eating an apple rather than doing the juice, which is pasteurized, because orange juice, everyone thinks it's high in vitamin C, but it's usually made from concentrate where they cook and cook and cook the orange juice until there's no water left, and then you get to add the water back yourself, and then there's some synthetic vitamin C added, not nearly the same as just eating an orange. I would think about all the foods in the Brassicaceae family, cabbage, kale, turnip, rutabaga, radishes, all these are wonderful foods. And I would really do my best to have one salad a day and make your own dressing. This is not a time to be eating a lot of junk, to be microwaving everything. I would say, hey, it's time to pay attention because we need to be as healthy as possible, as resistant, and build our immunity. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
You can hear Naturally with Brigitte Mars every Wednesday morning here on the KGNU Morning Magazine.